Morris, and you are about to embark on the next Pioneer Knowledge Services Because You Need to Know, a digital resource for you to listen to folks share their experience and knowledge around the field of knowledge management and nonprofit work. Sure, you check out Pioneer Knowledge Services website and find all the information about the Midwest Knowledge Management Symposium happening in June. You should be there.
Hi everyone, my name is April Lytle. I live in Ohio, sort of between Akron, Ohio and Cleveland, Ohio, and we have lots of interesting things here, like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Football Hall of Fame, and a beautiful park system. I love to spend time with my family. I'm a military wife, and I have two teenage children and two dogs. My children are my happy place, and being their mom makes me one of the luckiest people on the planet. Pretty much doing anything with my family is where I want to be: hiking, watching a movie, cooking out, walking the dogs. Family time is where I refuel. I've worked over 20 years in the field of quality compliance and regulatory assurance, so this doesn't mean that I'm the one inspecting the goods to be delivered. I work in tightly regulated industries. Basically, if it's regulated, I have worked there. Pharmaceuticals, medical device, food and beverage, cosmetics, software. And I ensure that those companies are compliant with all regulations and laws pertaining to the quality of the product and the safety of the consumer. I feel I create the most value by sharing knowledge. And sharing my knowledge around knowledge management is something I'm passionate about. I don't just like to share the knowledge, but I love to see good knowledge practices put into place, and I love seeing people get benefit out of those practices. The absolute best advice I have received was lead from where you are. I honestly don't remember where I heard this or who told me this. It was my daughter, actually, who made this real for me. It was during COVID, and I had lost my job managing in a Fortune 50 company, and I had taken an individual contributor position again. I watched and saw my daughter seem very disturbed that I would reduce myself to take this type of position after having climbed the corporate ladder. This is when I told her that the title didn't matter. I could lead from anywhere. I was so thankful that she gave me that reflective moment. I think it helped her understand that it's not about the climb, and reminds me every day that I'm not in this just for my peers, but to make processes and knowledge accessible to all by utilizing the position I have at that time.
Wow. Wow. You rolled it. Interesting position to be in the awareness it takes to understand that you can bring all of your talent, skills, and expertise, no matter what the position, no matter what the job, no matter what the title behooves the person. You're talking about a personality-driven way of doing business.
Absolutely. And it's not just business, right? Then allows it to flow into your personal life. It allows it to flow into organizations. I do a lot of event management and philanthropy work. All just kind of then articulate into those things as well, once you realize that it's not just specific to that one area.
It's kind of counterintuitive to the model that's out there for most, is that you bring the face the customer needs. You bring what the customer or client is best suited to absorb or correspond with. It's like you're just the same no matter where you go. You bring the same goods.
Right, absolutely. It's just knowing which thing to pull out of your pocket at what time you need it, right? Mm-hmm. You're still knowing what the customer needs, and that customer could be internal or external or family or friends, and then you're just looking to see which tool in your tool belt you need to use.
So we're talking about an awareness and education level, because it requires both those things: awareness of the environment, aware of others, and aware of yourself, but you got to build up that skill set in order to have a toolbox.
Right, absolutely.
Where do you get that? Where did you start?
Well, I applied for a position at a pharmaceutical company to be a microbiologist. Oh. Yeah, I have a biology degree. I didn't get my master's in knowledge management until much later in life. The lady who was hiring looked at my resume and said, "How about computers. Are you good with computers? I'm like, sure. But, and I'm glad she moved me there. And I just built on that. I wasn't afraid to change positions if I saw something that interests me. I'm not the kind of person who looks at something and says, oh, I don't have that experience. I'm like, I can bring this to the table that they don't have. Yeah. It was just kind of built up over the years. And then when I found knowledge management, it was like, this is what I've been looking for my entire life. It really just kind of sums it all up. You know, where do you get that tacit knowledge? Where do you get that explicit knowledge? Can you retain it? How do you catalog it? You know, everything at once. And then really started trying to apply that into my business. And one of those tools is always knowing, too, that I don't have the tool. You know, like my daughter said, it's just wherever you are, right? So then I started applying it to everywhere. And it really does make life easier when you don't have to be six different people. I'm just me. And I pull a different tool.
So again, it's an awareness level, because sometimes you run against the wall and you're not sure left, right, straight, up, down, which way. To back up and be reflective and to understand what's missing or what could be is kind of a visionary tool, don't you think? You have to have an imagination to be creative in that.
And I love the analogy of taking a step back, because usually there's an arrow and you just might be too close to the wall to see it.
Who did you say? Was it the job interview that said, oh, what, do you like computers? It's that arrow. It's the arrow of some other option.
Right.
That did not have in your sights. It wasn't like even front of mind. It was just not even on the plate. But sometimes opportunities come in wild directions, and you have to have enough bravery to say, yeah, I'll do that.
Absolutely. I like that. Sure. I'll go learn that. Which was another thing about knowledge management I loved, right? It's just learning. It's constant learning, always, right? That's really kind of, you know, people say, what are you passionate about? I'm passionate about learning. I love finding out anything I can about anything.
What was the first memory as a child where that took root? Where that was like, I guess I'm kind of like that.
Geez, I don't know. It's just always been kind of who I am.
Right. Well, let's go to the Wayback Machine.
Let's go back.
Let's see. Was there an event? You said you have a strong philanthropic bone in your body. So was there some adventure as a youth that you were like, oh, hey, this is not only entertaining, but revives me. I get energy from this.
Right. Well, and I think it was a lot of finding out that adults weren't afraid if I asked questions. I was always the one asking questions. There's where that learning comes from, right? And figuring out that my peers weren't afraid if I asked questions either. And if they didn't know, then I'd go to someone else who might. It was, you know, I'd go to camp over the summer and there are so many different people with so many different backgrounds and just asking.
You developed the inquisitive skill set. Did you also say that your peers recognized that you were always the one that had the fishing pole to go find the answer?
Yep.
So did you become the, hey, go ask. Hey, will you go ask? You know, because everybody else was afraid.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And then it started. And I was proud to hold that position.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. I loved being the one everybody asked a question of. And then I'd go find the answer if I didn't know, which gave me more knowledge.
Exactly.
But then as I started developing a little bit more, it was more of a, okay, they asked me this question. Maybe now I should tell them where to find the answer. Yeah. You know, teach the man to fish instead of me being the fisher.
There's an element you brought into that. The word that popped into my mind was broker. And that's being floated around now as a new kind of concept, the knowledge management broker. Really, you're a connector. You're an inquisitor. You're driven by your own self-interest. That being more comprehension, more understanding, more knowing of things. And it's almost like a driven passion of being a collector of reality, because you want to expand what you know. So therefore you're co-creating your own reality.
Yeah. I also find it as kind of like people who enjoy puzzles and finding the answers. I might know the knowledge, but somebody then presents me with a problem and it doesn't necessarily fit the bill. So how do we make it work? Not necessarily how do we change their problem, but how do we make the knowledge that we have fit what they need.
I'm similar framework. So I'm excited to have this conversation. In one of the past lives I've had working, I was built around asking questions of people. It was part function of being lessons learned and other things that I did for the military, in that there is an approach, what they call an approach, to asking questions. And the one that I'm really good at, the old private investigator TV show.
Columbo.
Columbo. Thank you. See, everybody knows Columbo. Everybody. Because Columbo just had this ability to look goofy and ask these, you know, just kept going down these rabbit holes just to try to drive more content out of somebody. Mm-hmm. But it is a way that you're building a communication structure in which you're extracting that tacit knowledge, sometimes against their own will. In that case, you know, as a private detective, you get them to spill the beans about something. It is a, as you said, it's like a puzzle. And it is really a mental model of connecting dots and bringing things back forward, or, you know, whichever direction it needs to go, to foster more and deeper conversation.
Yeah, and it's a good balance of between that diving deep and looking more specifically at something and taking that step back to see the big picture, because you have to see where that specific something fits into everything. Or else you lose it. Then you get down that rabbit hole and there's no way back out, or you haven't started digging a different hole, or, you know, so you have to be able to dig deep, but then also take your step back and look at the whole thing.
The creativity piece, the spark of innovation, the spark of thought, and it's heavy upon language, right? I can't be creative and dive deep if you don't understand what I'm saying. There has to be that common language. But where did you branch? I heard about the employment opportunity, but where did you branch over to be both scientific and artistic all in the same brain?
Oh, I don't know. Thank my parents. So I have a very analytical father, but he's also very creative. My mother is extremely creative. I mean, you could hand her a craft and she'll tell you how to make it. It's just kind of something I was always brought up with.
Well, wait a minute now. So you're basically giving me the shells of two different people, but the common thread that I didn't hear you say is that they are problem solvers.
Well, their parents, you know.
Well, that definition doesn't mean a whole lot all the way
not
across.
At all. Not at all. But I mean, they are definitely problem solvers. And I think it's creativity that gives them that key, right? So it's the, what you said, I'm a science background, absolutely. I have an undergrad in biology, right? So I've grown up with that. But with the creative part of me, I go to find it, to look at a problem, and then go to find the answer, right? Not just look at my, okay, what does science tell me? What do I, but this is the problem and let me go search. Let me go find. Let me go see what I can do. And then also looking at things a little bit differently. So I get responses from people all the time. How did you think to use that for this purpose? Like, well, instead of pigeonholing it into just what it's been used for in the past, what it says on the advertisement, I look at it as to what it truly functions for. What can I use it for? And that might fit differently. It's the same with knowledge. It's the same across companies. It's the same with everything.
It's just imagination.
Yeah, it really is. It's imagination and that creative trying to find something that fits.
But it's like, where do you cross the line from the known and being confident to the unknown and still being confident to try?
And I think it's all a matter of risk. If there's a low risk involved, I'm not afraid to break it. I tell people all the time that there's lots of mechanisms and everything in your computer. It's built in, right? If you don't know how to do something, just go start pressing buttons and it will tell you if you're doing something bad, right? If it says, you know, this will delete your entire hard drive, warning, you want to continue, then, right? Then take those warnings seriously. But really, there's no risk, right? Just go find out. There's an inherent risk of hurting someone or breaking something that can't be replaced or something. Then I'm a little bit more cautious, but it's always a matter of risk.
Well, you bring up a good point, and that's risk adverse. There are people that are risk adverse for a lot of different reasons. A lot of it comes down to the organic structure of the human. And I know you and I talked about, well, what's the organic KM? What's organic to an individual to kind of bring them up as a good knowledge management type person? Let's talk about that. What's organic in behaviors and attributes, do you think, that's important to be a good KM person?
Well, I think there's always that inherent ask why, or what, or, you know, just ask the question. I think that's inherent to a good KM person.
Let me just add to that, because as you said that, I can remember a few children that I've had that ask insistent questions because they know it'll agitate.
Yes.
I think there's a difference to asking the why if you're actually intentful about wanting to know the answer or just poke the bear. Poke the bear.
Yeah. Well, sometimes poke the bear gets you what you want, though. You know, that's a tool as well to pull out of your tool belt. It's good to know. Also, I think it's that self-awareness. We talked about that self-awareness and knowing where you are and what can be applied. And again, bringing back the tool belt, right? Just knowing who you are to address a situation. Also being able to take those tools and share the wealth. I'm a huge proponent of not hoarding knowledge, of not keeping it to yourself. Just let people know and let them know how, let them know why, let them know, you know, not just the what. That makes you a great KMer. And then not being afraid to tell them that you don't know makes you a great KMer. It's a great mindset to have.
What I hear from what you're saying is, integrity and honesty are solid attributes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we want, you know, everybody's talking about that one source of truth, right? When they're like, which system do I go to for the source of truth? I'm like, well, right. So we're always talking about that integrity, that truth factor, that we want our knowledge to be true and correct. I think it goes back to basics, right? And I tell people this all the time. There's a difference between data and knowledge. Data really doesn't give you truth. It's just data, and how you apply that, then that's your truth. To kind of understand the difference and know where your answer lies, right? Your answer is kind of in the knowledge base. So you have to go sometimes dig through the data and then apply it correctly. And then once you have that, then you've got your answer. The data is not necessarily your answer. I've had people do that too, you know, ask them for an answer and they just send you back a stream of numbers. I'm like, that didn't tell me anything.
Wow, thank you. Yeah. You're now blocked. Get out of here. We're done with that.
Right.
We're at a point now where I need to ask what April's definition of knowledge management is.
So my definition of knowledge management, it's pretty basic. It's the drawing out and access and maintenance of knowledge. But I know you shouldn't define something with the word that's in it.
Who says that?
Well, knowledge management is kind of a throwaway term anyway. Somebody couldn't think of something better, so they said knowledge management. And it means something different to everyone.
It does.
I'm really focused in that tacit knowledge, that knowledge that you can't get just anywhere, that isn't in a book, that isn't written down. And how do we get it to be more accessible to people? So it's that part of knowledge that really excites me and drives my passion, and probably drives me more to learn and keep on learning, because I want that tacit knowledge. I want what people, you know, what I can't read in a book easily and things of that nature, what people can give me.
But what motivates you to do that? What's your primer motivation?
I don't know. I guess I'm just a people person. So I really do.
Right. Well, I get what you're saying. And I'm going back to that early imprint where you were like the hitch pin to knowledge, because you were brave enough to go ask somebody, and all your peers in those areas were like, oh, go ask, because they had their fear set or whatever their stipulation was. But it was something that was organically just, I like doing this.
Yeah.
But what's the driver? It doesn't sound like it's a selfish thing.
No, I don't think it is. I mean,
let's just look back at that picture, because there's got to be a level of, aha, people need me. I'm important, right? But
that's selfish.
Well, is it really, though? I mean, it feeds you. So therefore, if you're working for everybody else, it's a win-win in that regard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But is it selfish?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? I think it can be selfish. Like you said, it does feed me, right? It does. It lifts me up.
Yeah.
It gives me, you know, motivation to keep on going. It makes me feel good.
Right.
But at the same time, it makes them feel good. And I feel good when they feel good, right? So again, that's selfish and not selfish at the same time. I think my motivation is really just, honestly, is to make, my motivation has always been in others. I'm a caregiver. Like I said, my kids are my life, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And my mom said when I was in high school, she's like, she has been ready to be a mother since she was like 10. So it's just, not that she was wanted me to be, but I just have a caring, nurturing kind of thing. And when people have a question or they're stumped or they have a problem, it's just within me to try to help them. And the best way that I can find to help with that problem or share my knowledge or get something else.
You got to wonder, how do we get that in a bottle and get everybody to care about stuff? How do we transfer that experience that is a positive attribute that we can help the community build more people like that?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question. If we find out how to bottle that, we are rich, right? Selfish again. So I don't know. I think it's more, it's kind of that age-old question that KMers have had for a long time is, how do you get people to not hold on to their knowledge? How do you get them to share? How do you make it worthwhile for them to share, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, I think, especially the corporate world, has set it up so that they feel like they can't share. And if they do share, then they're less valuable. I think maybe positioning yourself kind of like I do, in that you are the knowledge getter, you are the answerer, you are the person to go to, makes that value come back, right? Even though you're sharing the knowledge, instead of, I have as much as I can and I need to, you know, lock it all away in the chest and nobody else can have it.
Nobody gets it, yeah.
Then they can't fire me because I know everything. Instead, making yourself more available to share that knowledge and making yourself, I don't know, valuable to the company because you're the person who can help with different situations.
The fixer, the connector, the transformer, the one that knows stuff. It's a good position to be in. Mm-hmm. As we go to the digitized world, mm-hmm. how do we build that to where the utility is like that in the system as much as it is that one or two people? Because the problem is, we can't all hire people that are all like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think that many people exist mm-hmm. to begin with. But everything is trainable, teachable to some degree. So how do we build in better performance enhancers to get more people on board? How do we swing them over?
Oh, that's a really good question, too. I think that taking the people that are good at it and putting them in positions that feed the information that's created. So like, for example, in UX, if you get people who understand, my consumers are going to want a one-click solution to go here, right? Or I don't want to have to open three different dialog boxes to get my answer. Or it helps the people who aren't so good develop products that are good and that can help people a lot better. And I think the easier we make it to access, the easier we make it to interact, more likely to share, more likely to work. Yeah.
How do we incentivize good behavior?
Well, I've always been a proponent of just tell people that they're doing good.
What? That's so 1950s.
Right?
Who does
it
that
really
anymore?
Is. Everybody thinks of incentivize and they're like, oh, well, we don't have the money to do that. We don't have the gifts. We don't have the whatever. Yeah. I'm like, can you just tell me I did a good job? I mean, that would be great. You know, put it in my performance review that I did great this time, you know? You know, being a manager for a long time, I did have, and I still have, you know, a notebook for all of my employees, even my peers, right? I have one notebook and I've got a tab for everybody. And when they do something that's outstanding, I put it in the book. I always tell them, then I put it in the book as well. When there's something that I need them to work on, I tell them. That's more uncomfortable than the praise, mm-hmm. right? But then I put it in my book, right? That way, when I see that they've made progress on that, it goes in my book and I can say, oh, look at this. Look at how much progress they're making.
That is a great leadership add-on you just threw out there. How many people do you know do that?
Maybe one or two that I've come across. It comes from not being able to store everything in my brain. So everything goes in the book, right? Now, granted, right now my book is digitized, so it's password protected and everything. And we live on our phones and everything. So everything is at my fingertips. It used to just be a notebook that I locked in my desk drawer, now everything's digitized. But again, then I have that to go back on. And if somebody comes to me and says, well, what do you think of so-and-so? I just had my current company, we give away recognition awards for people who are doing great work in the field of quality or the field of customer service or something like that. And I had someone come to me and say, hey, I need a nomination for a quality award. So I go to my book. Look how great this person's doing. It's really incentivizing.
I've been on the planet a fair enough time with huge, diverse background of employment situations. And you're the first. You are the first that tells me that that's a thing to do. The attaboy folder was the only thing I ever knew about. And that was the attaboy folder when somebody gave you recognition. Ah. You stuck that in your own folder. Mm-hmm. This is such an easy thing to do. And I challenge anybody in leadership to adopt it because I think it's got the most power. Because it adds so much contextual legwork to long-term leadership. You've codified it. It's not in your memory banks. You've summarized it. You bulletized, however you recorded it. But you've put effort into making it recorded. That builds so much depth and understanding of a lot of things. I just don't hear anybody ever doing it.
I do it. Anybody could do it. And honestly, I have the attaboy folder too. Who doesn't? Because I look back on it on occasion to make sure I'm doing a good job. If I haven't had an attaboy, I need to go up my game. But also in today's day and age, with everything being electronic, I can slide an email over mm-hmm. to something. I can have this mm-hmm. tangible mm-hmm. index for this person. I can search if I want to say, you know, who did something for this project. I search and pull out all my stuff, which also gives me a great start to my resource catalog. So if I need to know who's great at this problem solving, who works in this area, who does this, I do my search and there I go. I've got my list of people that I need to go talk to.
Well, it would be great if HR did this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're talking about a form and function of, I would have to assume, better people retention for an organization. That makes life simple for everybody. If we just had a way and a methodology, I will say, I think so much of that gets lost in the shuffle of doing business that, like you said, if people would just say thank you would be a plus, you know,
right. Because I'm good with that. Just give me a thank you.
We've become so transactional in work that we don't even, it's just looked over, you know, it's just looked over. It's not really recognized for how powerful this could be.
Yeah.
That you're talking about relationships. You're talking about people, organic structures that respond a little better, organic conversation or comment or something of effort.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And it's also a great touch point to know when you've last talked to someone. Again, in this day and age, I work remotely. I've been working remotely for, I don't know, the past 10 years now. It is hard to maintain those people relationships when you don't see people day to day. So I see them on the video chat, but that's only my small sect of people or people that I'm working on a project with right now. So sometimes I'll put in my calendar 15 minutes to go talk to so-and-so because I haven't talked to them in a month and I want to just touch base, right? And that really goes a long way of incentivizing people too, because they know that they're cared about. They know that somebody's out there that wants to know about them, not the project they're working on, not the last thing that they did.
Yeah.
It's that water cooler kind of talk that you miss when you're remote. Yeah.
A little chit chat. Yeah. Good example of good leadership, April. And I got to say, this was extremely powerful conversation that we spent a lot of time constructing in the front end, but actually it blossomed and grew its own legs all by itself. Any last tidbits, brilliancy that you forgot to mention?
Reminding people that they're people is a great thing. And honestly, you know, knowledge management doesn't happen with machines. We use them as tools and they can track and they can trend and they can codify all of our stuff for us. But the knowledge sharing happens between people. So you need it to be people focused.
I thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to Because You Need to Know, the Reference Podcast in Knowledge Management. My name is Sony Toneme. As an art administrator, Because You Need to Know has been my go-to podcast and has helped me hone my management skills. Please consider sponsoring the podcast with your business.
have just finished our latest Because You Need to Know, a public service of Pioneer Knowledge Services. Please join us on LinkedIn and find us at pioneer-ks.org.